everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And I'm Alan.
We run ReverseThieves.com, an anime and manga blog and podcast site, where you can get 3+ blog posts every week, as well as various other podcasts, including our seasonal SWAT reviews, where we look at the first episode of a bunch of new shows of the season. And of course, you can get all the old episodes of the monthly Speakeasy Podcast there as well.
And if you have any questions or comments or show topics, please email them to us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter. I'm HisuiRT.
And I'm NarutakiRT.
And if you like this podcast or any other thing that we do, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It helps us go up in the ranks and contact new listeners. Let's check in with what's new on the blog this month.
So my manga of the month this month, which I feel slightly, just a little bit, ties into Halloween because there are costumed characters in it, is a new series. Just the first book just came out in English, called Kigurumi Guardians. It's by Lily Hoshino. You might know her for her character designs. She did the character designs for Penguin Drum and many other things. She does a lot of fan art. She's pretty active social media. And this is kind of her magical girl series with giant mascots who are human-sized, and they also turn into handsome men, and then they also have their high school counterparts who are the warriors. So it's like, I feel a lot of Penguin Drum essence in the series. It's its own spin. It's sexually charged, but not exploitive. It's just like very like Ikuhara.
I was about to say, I was like,
I'm just saying,
she worked with Ikuhara. I assume, like, I feel like
you know, either he rubbed off on her or they were just like a perfect fit, you know, because she has that ability anyway, I think.
I mean just from also the artist that he picked for Utena and the lady that he also picked for Yuri Beardrum, I think he seeks out definitely character designers who kind of have that like sexual but not horny vibe to their work.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So the series is really funny. It is more complicated than you realize at the beginning. So it's a dark magical girl series. It's really very, something really nice to see, I think. So I'm looking forward to more books of that coming out.
We also had a bunch of SWAT reviews. Man, this season, if you haven't listened to them yet, I feel this like really, I felt like was either, man, that show was really great, I can't wait to watch more of it, or, oh my god, that show burnt my eyes. There was like very little in the middle this season. Like, I feel like there was some really strong stuff, and then there was some real garbage.
And this season felt like maybe we're striking a better balance with Amazon getting their stuff, because we didn't watch any Amazon stuff, but I didn't feel as though I was missing out on a huge library. We're definitely missing a few shows, for sure. There's some stuff on there that I did want to check out, but I didn't feel as though there was this gaping hole in what we were able to watch, since we only watched stuff on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, it did feel like last season felt really sparse because anime strike.
And I feel the last two seasons, since they entered, and now maybe, I don't know how it's going for them, so maybe they're backing off just a little bit and not taking everything.
Maybe one day I'll be able to watch The Great Passage.
We just have to hope for the downfall of Amazon. I think that's probably really possible, so...
No, we don't!
The most likely scenario.
All we have to do is wait for Amazon not to give a flip about anime anymore. I feel that is much more likely than the collapse of Amazon.
I don't know what you're talking about, Al.
You mean the service that people trust so much? They're like, yeah, just leave my door unlocked so they can...
Oh, we will... No, we will get a special Amazon lock. You install a special lock from... It's crazy, you guys. Do not trust Amazon. They're not your friend.
I mean, buy from them. They're convenient, but do not trust them. They are not your, they are your business partner, not your buddy.
I would even say if you don't have to buy from them, don't buy from them.
I'm willing to accept them as a business partner. I'm not willing to accept them as, what do you call it, the buddy that I give the key to my house.
Ongoing investigations. What we've been reading, watching, and playing.
So we are going to have a shorter ongoing investigations this month because we went to New York Comic Con and the second half of the podcast is longer than usual and we go kind of in depth. That's really our only coverage for New York Comic Con this year, so we tried to talk about a lot of different stuff. I read... And let's not just discuss why I decided that I was going to read this, okay? I don't know, okay? I don't know.
Wait, what, are there really good-looking guys on the cover?
Nope.
Wow. All right, continue then.
So I read the new, I think it's being simulpubbed, manga Final Fantasy Lost Stranger. I read the first four chapters. It's on Crunchyroll, and it's sort of Final Fantasy's canon Sword Art Online, you know, it's like branded. That's what I mean. Branded. Our own. We get taken into the video game world.
Well, I have a quick question. Are they taken into the Final Fantasy 14, which is their current MMORPG, or are they taken into just like the one that exists in this game where I would not be able to tell?
Well, let me tell you the story of this manga, Al.
Sure.
So it's about a brother and sister who work at Square Enix, and they have dreamed of working at Square Enix since they were kids. They are huge Final Fantasy nerds. They love Final Fantasy, and their goal is to eventually create their own Final Fantasy game and get to create their original version of the Final Fantasy world.
Do they have a rival who they hate that works on the Dragon Quest team?
Not shown.
Okay.
Supplemental material, perhaps.
In my fiction, I got.
And they get transported to a Final Fantasy-like world. So it's actually none of the current versions of, or sorry, none of the versions that have existed of the Final Fantasy world. It has lots of elements from many of them. So it's almost as if, it's not even, at least from what I read, it's not even the brother and sister's version of it, as if, oh, bam, this is actually our version that we would have made. Because seemingly they don't have a real concrete concept of what their game would be. So, like, it's not that either. And the kind of twist, I'm going to say,
is incest.
No. So, I have a lot of feelings about the things that happen in this story. So, so spoilers for the first chapter, and I think that's reasonable. So,
actually, the way you're describing this is probably like spoilers for the first four chapters, because who gives a shit?
Look, I'm going to assume that somebody might want to go check just based on what I'm going to say, because honestly, it's not all terrible. So, you know, the sort of twist, or many of the little twists on the Final Fantasy world here, is that if you die, you dead. So it's the Fire Emblem version of Final Fantasy. So,
oh, random quick aside. Did you know that there is permadeath in Fire Emblem Warriors? Like the Dynasty Warriors Fire Emblem?
Wow. I mean, I would never play that game, but that's interesting.
I just wanted to share that on the air. Continue on with your story.
So the reason they find this out is that there is a big, cool dragon that shows up, and the brother and sister kind of are just getting acclimated to the world. They meet a few other fun adventurers that they sort of kind of, they get separated, and then the sister is very friendly, so she kind of makes friends with some other people and is able to kind of
ingratiate them with it.
Yeah, with a not high-level party. So the super cool little sister, who's actually really cool and seems fun, they immediately kill her and fridge her for the brother. So the whole story past the first chapter is the brother wanting to get revenge because this dragon fridged his sister so that he could have a story. Well, he didn't say that, but he should. And I felt like the first chapter, if it had kept the little sister, because there was no incesty, there was nothing.
That's why she had to die.
I guess. Like, he wasn't a perv, and she wasn't like, my brother. It was just actually siblings who got along and had a common interest in Final Fantasy, which was nice. So I really kind of annoyed that they decided to kill her because I kind of liked her. So if it had been the two of them, it might have been actually kind of a fun series. But then I was really mad that they killed a sister. So the brother's power in the series is that he can see information about items and stuff.
So he's a blue mage?
But he doesn't have them. But I always think of blue mages as being able to talk with animals and stuff.
Oh, and get powers from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. This is.
He just has
to identify. He can look at bread and know how much that bread costs or something.
Or like how much hit point you get back for using it.
Right. Yes. And apparently that's not something that. Because the world isn't. It's not the type of video game where it's a video game. This is supposed to be, no one in here knows it's a game or anything like that. It just happens to be a game-like world. So there's not menus and yada yada and whatnot.
So like you join the guild and like a thing pops up.
Or the other characters are, you know, they're just really living in the fantasy world. It's not them as player.
Mm-hmm.
So the brother's power is just so boring. I mean, come on.
Look, Kate.
Like, I feel, and Kate. He can upgrade it. And so eventually he's able to look at enemies and know some shit about them. But like, honestly.
Identify is a very important level one spell, Kate, in D&D.
Well, I was going to say, it's not that it's not useful. If I was playing a game, very useful. But as a main character's power, super boring, not fun, not interesting.
It's like, it's the difference between the superpower that's useful in real life and the superpower that's cool for a story. Like, if you had the level to for another D&D spell, if you had the level one light spell that you could just create light whenever you wanted, in real life, super useful. In, like, a fantasy story, you are the loser that everybody laughs at.
If that's your only power. Yeah, so I thought that was pretty... He also is training to be an archer. So I feel as though they were really trying to make me care. And I appreciate the effort. I do. But you should have kept the little sister and made her an archer and killed the brother and she could get revenge for him. It's not a super fan servicey series. So it has that going for it. The rest of his party are, you know, somewhat entertaining, but his main connection is, I know you're going to be shocked to hear this, is the healer girl. I know, it's weird. Not very many cute healer girls in RPG fantasy settings. It's a unique and very special take on it.
But to be, as we've learned about Final Fantasy, to be true ultra waifu status, you have to be a summoner.
She will probably get there. All of them are pretty low level. And then, of course, they're not really that good, so they do a lot of training in the first four chapters because they want to join this asshole guy and his guild who are going after the dragon that killed his sister. I mean, that guy doesn't care about that, but he's just very powerful and thinks of them as peons.
So, you know what they should do, what class they should get? They should get a bard, because then he can just shoot smog right in weak point.
And I guess I don't know what the story, if there's a story really beyond the dragon or if there's going to be a lot of little mini adventures, because by the end of the fourth chapter, they've made a lot of progress as far as training up in order to join this other group of people. So, I also don't know, you know, some of these little tie-in stories, they just go for a little while, a couple of books or whatnot, and they're finished. So,
but there seems to be like any, Like, there's I'm assuming there's nothing like, there's no like Cloud or like Kane running around or any like.
Haven't seen any cameos of any characters. Well, I want to say I haven't really played a Final Fantasy game since 9, and I know what the characters of 10 look like, so I would recognize them. But beyond that, I'm not familiar. So if any of them were in the backgrounds or something, I wouldn't know. And it's more as if elements from all the different games are all in one game, mm-hmm. and you don't fully know how the world works because there's different elements from different things.
I guess, yeah.
Although it's definitely more of a classic fantasy setting than, say, something like seven or eight, so.
And there's no, like, you haven't seen, like, the Cid of this world? Or, like, a Biggs and Wedge? As the characters that just, like, get repeated a lot.
Not that I did not recall seeing. I mean, we've seen Moogles. So.
I assumed, like, Moogles and Chocobos. I was just, yeah. like named characters, either unique named characters or, like legacy characters. Like, there's usually a Cid in each Final Fantasy. For a while now, there's been a bit Wedge and Biggs, so. Yeah, no, it does just seem like, in many ways, yeah, them just cashing in on the transported to a magical world genre.
It feels like that. The art is good. It's not offensive, like I said. I feel as though it's very clearly fridging a good, or at least seemingly fun female character in order to have a story for the dude. Mm-hmm. Which was really not necessary, because They both get transported there. I mean, isn't that a story? You know, why did one of them need to die? They were both living in the regular world, and suddenly they're in a fantasy world.
Like,
they could have just been separated.
Like, they could. Did you ever watch the D&D cartoon back in the day?
No, not really.
Like, because in many ways, like, to get back home, like, they're always trying, like, alternate ways, but one of the major ways is if they're told by the Dungeon Master, who is a character there, that if they can kill Tiamat, Tiamat is, like, one of the things blocking their way home, and if they can kill Tiamat, they might find a way home. So, like, I feel like that's all they need. They just basically need the Dungeon Master to come out and say, if you can kill, you know, the dragon, then you can find a way back to your world. And then he can disappear or only show up periodically. And there you go. Plot. Same thing. No dead sister.
Oh, I forgot. Part of the plot is that because the guy has all Final Fantasy knowledge, that's also his power. Fabulous. He's looking for a Phoenix Down or whatever, and people are talking about how that's just a legend and that doesn't exist, so presumably they will eventually bring her back to life because they will find this legendary thing that can revive people. I forgot that part, but
so he just keeps rummaging through people's houses, looking through chests and pots.
That was all of chapters 3 and 4, spoilers, so.
Because New York Comic Con is basically, and some other stuff has really made this month, and SWAT reviews and a million things have made this month really busy. We did not watch any Ideon. But, good listeners, we are not going to deprive you of...
Well, you aren't.
Yes. This is a group effort, Kate.
Okay,
though only I was the one who watched it. We're not going to deprive our listeners of robot action and Tomino action. Like me and Kate watching Ideon and the show appearing on High Dive. I was like, you know what? I should finally start watching Zabungle. Because... especially once we finish Ideon and Zabungle, I will finish all of Tomino's mecha works. Then, like, the only thing I would have to get work on is, like, his pre-mecha stuff, which is real. I'm not even sure it's all subbed. Zabungle, interesting show. It's the show that actually comes right after. Once you finish Ideon, you work on Zabungle. And, man, the shows are definitely night and day because, you know, Ideon is definitely Tomino in super serious, super depressio, kill 'em all mood. And Zabungle is definitely him mostly in Overman King Gainer kind of like fun, goofy mode. So he definitely feels like a reaction to just the death drive that was Aeon. The first thing I noticed is Zabungo, even more than Aeon, just drops you in. There is just no big explanation of the world. All you know is there's a desert and there are Mecha and there are these guys. They're on these like hover bikes and they're being harassed by this other group, and the main character helps them out. But he gets in, helping, and he doesn't have a Mecha or a hover bike of his own. He in fact steals one of the people who is attacking, basically the main character group. He steals one of their, hover bikes and helps them out, but he hurts his arm. And then he just like goes walking off after he helps them out to a town. And, the main girl, Rag, who's the leader of these sand rats, she like goes and decides to help him out and get him into this town. And then they find out that he wants to steal this mech from this like trading group. And since they're already kind of punks and they help them out, they're like, sure, we'll help you with this plan. Like in the first episode, it isn't revealed till the second episode. Is this a different planet, like a desert planet, kind of like Planet Gunsmoke from Trigon? Or is this a post-apocalyptic Earth? Because it easily could be either. And you find out in like the like two, like even, like 30-second opening in the second episode that this is a planet called Zola that is so kind of in disarray that the people don't even remember the name of the planet is Zola anymore. The planet might actually be post-apocalyptic, just not post-apocalyptic. It's post-apocalyptic Zola, but that isn't fully clear yet. So it turns out that in stealing the main suit, the Zabungle, the guy's plan is him and the sand rats are going to steal it, and they have to run away for 3 days. Because on this planet, basically everything, any crime that you commit, has a statute of limitations of 3 days. If you can get away with anything for 3 days, no one is supposed to. It's just considered, well, it's done. Statue of Limitations is over.
That sounds like a Kino's Journey plot.
So that also explains why the bandits attacked the sand rats in the first episode. Because basically, people just, since you can get away with anything after 3 days, it's like this Mad Max world where like the strong survive and people team up. Or like this in the North Star, where like people just team up because they know if they can get away with anything for 3 days, they get off scot-free. But once again, that is never anything that is spelled out. It comes up in dialogue. So you just have to eventually figure out that, oh yeah, that's like the 3 day rule. It turns out also that, once again, something that I've only just figured out is there are basically two races or classes. It's not super clear. Everybody that we've met so far are the civilians, and they look like normal humans, and they live in this post-apocalyptic or desert planet wasteland. There seems to be a higher race or case of people called the Innocent, and they have high-tech stuff, and they trade occasionally, like, the few resources of the waste for, like, stuff like hover bikes and mecha to the civilians. But we haven't seen any Innocent. In fact, at the end of the sixth episode, like, one person, like, is talking to one, like a craft of the Innocent, and the Innocent is talking to him over a, like a loudspeaker, but we don't see in it, so we don't know if they're like aliens or humans or whatever. Jiron, the main character, wants to steal the Zabungle, is that 2 weeks ago, a guy named Timp came in and, for reasons that haven't been explained, murdered his family. And so he wants to steal the Zabungle and kill this guy. And everybody, when he tells them, thinks he's a crazy person because it's 2 weeks. So like, it's 2 weeks ago, man. That's over 3 days. Like, you can't get revenge. And he's like, no, they killed my whole family. They killed my mom, dad, and my siblings. I don't care if it was 3 days ago. I'm going to get revenge on this guy. But everybody just treats him like he's like this crazy revenge obsessed guy.
I don't get it, because if it's a lawless world, essentially lawless, wouldn't everybody be doing that? Nope. So not only is the Statue of Limitations 3 days, but also forgiveness is in 3 days?
Apparently, like, there's some hints that, like, essentially, people pay a lot of lip service, but there's a lot of deep-seated resentment because the person they steal the Zabungo from is the Cargo family. And, like, the daughter of the Cargo family takes a shine to Jiron, and she's secretly trying to help him keep the Zabungo. And her dad has a rivalry with this other guy who they're both, like, rival, like, transporter families. They're kind of like these clans that stay together and trade. And they definitely have wronged each other in the past and technically have forgiven each other. But they're definitely, like, basically are waiting for excuses. So you kind of get the feeling it's definitely supposed to be a flawed system. And it's just,
you think?
Yeah. So, but it's not, like, supposed to be, you're thinking that this is supposed to be a good system. It's just, you know, there's, like, obviously a lot of, like, people pretending to follow this. Like, Jiron just straight up does not care about, like, the social niceties. He is getting this motherfucker.
The social niceties of being okay with your family being murdered. Well, I guess what I don't understand is why anyone would care if he go and murder that guy then. Wouldn't that be the normal?
Like, nobody's, like, trying to stop him or put him in, like, jail. It's more like he's just, they treat it like he's a weird eccentric. Like more if, like, somebody wronged you minorly and you were really insistent on getting, like, revenge. Nobody is, like, trying to stop him, but they're all like, wow, what a weirdo.
Get over it, man.
No, like, the guy who's, like, who also voices Ataru, who's one of the sand rats, has, like, once or twice been like, get over it, man. Let's just, like, move on. We've, like, got the Zabungle. Which, funny is, actually, now that I think about it, I say the Zabungle, but they actually have two Zabungles. Like, the Zabungle is definitely a higher class of suit than a lot of the other mecha that people have, but it's hardly unique. And the Cargo family, and then eventually the Sand Rats and the Cargo, since they, like, because of stuff, ally with each other. They have two Zabungles, and it's definitely hinted that there are more of them. So it's more like, it's not like a hero suit. It's more like if most people are running around with, like, GMs and Zakus, the Zabungle is more like an Alex. It's definitely, you know, it's a good suit, but it isn't like this prototype, the original Gundam, you know, leagues above everything, one of a kind. It's more like, oh, he's got a really good suit. But yeah, you find out that the guy, Timp, definitely, I only just found out he's not, I think he's a civilian. He's definitely not one of the innocent, but he's working for the innocent, and he's, like, doing jobs for them. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that, like, the innocent had this guy's family killed, and, like, he's, like, trying to keep Jiron, like, occupied. So there's definitely something there's definitely more with him going. Because, like, he just reported in to, like, he's the guy who was talking to the innocent and, like, giving that report on his going. I don't know, it's pretty interesting. Like I said, it's mostly, like, silly. Like, Timp, for all his murderous and scheming, is kind of a comic villain at times. He's, like, a weird Tomino comic villain, because he's, like, doing stuff like accidentally, you know, eating his own cigarette because he gets so flustered at one point, or, like, slipping down a mountain. But he also murdered the main character's family as a plot of the innocent. And, you know, Elchi, who's the daughter of, you know, the Cargo family, he gets her dad killed, which is what makes the Sand Rats and the Cargo family team up together. So it's that kind of Tomino weirdness where, like, comedy, but also murder.
My favorite!
But yeah, it is interesting also because they are in this kind of Mad Max world. So, like, They really have to conserve ammo, gasoline, like in any Mad Max world, is like such a valuable resource and have you traded. And like the only way to really get like high technology is to trade with the innocent. In fact, Elchie's like, she wants to be like a woman of culture. And like, you get the feeling that there, why I thought it was post-apocalyptic is there was a large culture on the planet and she like wants to restore culture and learning and like law and rule to the world. And she basically like, only then can we start making technology and living off the waste and not just like surviving off trading with the innocent. So that's like her main goal. Although it's kind of like, once again, like a lot of things in this show, it's like half comedic because she's like so obsessed with culture. And her like dad like only supported culture when it was like dancing girls are a part of culture. So I'm dancing girls. So like part of the crew are these like can-can dancing girls that the dad like hired because, hey, that's part of culture and that will make my daughter happy. But like they're also now currently training those girls to like fight with guns and pilot suits. So it was interesting that like in the last episode when they get attacked, the can-can girls basically have to take off their can-can outfits and like go around shooting machine guns.
Why can't they do that in their can-can outfits?
It's just to restrict.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, apparently Elchie and Rag both kind of have a thing for Jiron. So there's a little love triangle. So I'm just, I was talking to our friend Pats. He was here recently and he watched the show a while back. And he said, yeah, his biggest flaw is that it starts with a lot of story, but it's 50 episodes. So it starts with a lot of story. And then like in the middle, there's a like goof-a-doof, goof-a-doof, goof-a-doof story, goof-a-doof, goof-a-doof, goof-a-doof. So I'm like kind of still in the heavy story part. So I haven't gotten to like the kind of time wasting parts. It's interesting so far just to like kind of, once again, I feel like Tomino definitely drops you into this world. Like, nobody is like, oh, we are the civilians and we trade with you. Basically, every episode you have to kind of, like, figure out a little more of the world. So I'm curious to, like, learn more about the world. You know, why did the innocent have Jiron's family killed? Like, they definitely, like, they almost seem to regret giving out the Zabungle units. Especially like now that Jiron has one. So there seems to be a little more to the Zabungles than, you know, just slightly great suits. But that's still a little bit of a mystery. You know, what the heck is Timp doing? I'm curious. It definitely hooked my interest.
This episode's food for thought.
Thought is, what anime do you keep meaning to watch but you never seem to get around to?
Listen to our song!
Oh,
what's your answer to the food for thought?
The question was, what is an anime that you keep meaning to watch but never get around to? And obviously, I thought up this question because I had like fan subs of Zabungle on my hard drive for like 4 or 5 years now, and I kept meaning to watch it, and then finally it got on High Dive, so I watched it and I was like, ah, that's a great question. I'm sure that everybody has like one or two of those shows. And my God, we have never gotten so many answers to a food for thought ever.
I think your question really resonated.
We got like 10. We're never gonna get this again. It's just like, I nearly cried. Kate was like, should we read them all? I'm like, yes, we'll never get 10 again. Please, just one time, do all 10.
So I have to say that, you know, should we shame people when we're reading them? Or should we just accept them as they are?
No, Kate, people want to be judged.
Okay, well, I'll just say that 2 people out of these 10 said Utena.
For shame.
Right? So, Berserk Hat and Save vs. Jared both said Utena.
Jared! Ah! I mean, I thought better of you.
I am shocked. Just shocked.
Do you think that, I mean, with Zabungle, like 50 episodes and a movie, is kind of a tall order, but you, I mean, 39 is not some small number.
It's certainly not small, especially by modern standards of shows.
Yeah.
We're just hamming it up for you guys. I don't really judge you.
Jared isn't that much younger than me, so I feel like he came from an era where, what do you call it, you took on, you know, 100 episode shows. So for shame, Jared, for shame.
Kitschy _ said Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. That's on my list as well. I'm not sure I'm like totally shamed about it that I have not watched it yet, but it's also on my list.
I should definitely one day.
Wait, are we giving our answers now at the same time? What are we doing?
No. I was just saying that, like, I too have not watched Full Metal Brotherhood.
You've not watched the original Full Metal Alchemist! Shame! 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 If I was going to pick one for... I was thinking about how if we were going to pick for each other what the one would be, that would definitely be mine for you. See, you don't like it. You don't like it when you're shamed. But we shame the listeners. Watched, like,
you know what it was? I watched like half of it, and then I was like, I'll just read the manga. And then the manga diverged, like the anime diverged so much from the manga. But I was like, already reading manga.
So you've kind of seen Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood then, because
yeah,
that follows more closely to the manga.
But then I didn't finish the manga because I like...
Oh, okay. Elliot Page said Flowers of Evil. Vinny Av AGC had a few things, but I'm just going to pick one, which was Serial Experiments Lane. So I thought that was an interesting one, especially because I was just recently thinking about it. I think we were just recently talking about it.
I just recently found out there was supposed to be a Lane sequel that never got made. You know, I feel like he's just young enough that like it escapes the... He just came out of the you have to watch Lane period and thereby becomes like, I mean, I know you're not a big fan of it. I feel like it is a show that is a little distant from the viewer, which doesn't make it like, unless it like really synced with you, it is a show that is not like super inviting at first.
Trick the TM said, had a bunch of answers. I'm just going to pick one, which is Trigun. So actually, a lot of the answers from this person, I feel like, come from that era.
Read the other one.
Okay, Escaflowne. Mm-hmm. So a very similar era. And then the other one is Original Gundam, which I bet is on a lot of people's lists. That one, obviously, different era. But I feel as though that one, if you could poll everyone, seems as though it would be on a lot of people's. I feel like I should watch this, but I never have.
Yeah, no, I mean, it isn't like Legend of Galactic Heroes, but I mean, it is pretty long and it is kind of fillery, especially if you're not going to watch the movie trilogy, if you're going to watch the whole original TV series. You know, once again, Pats was just over and he had Gundam Versus, and you know, you've got to watch episodes where like they fight the Zaccarello, the pumpkin-faced
I am anybody who is has not watched Original Gundam and feels like they should just watch the movies. Just that that's a perfectly acceptable thing to do.
I mean, I feel like there's some interesting points of watching the TV series, but yeah, I feel like if you just keep putting it off and putting it off, the movies will give you 95% of what you need, and that's gonna be more important than anything.
Fat Buddha said Steins Gate. Here's a tip. You can just take that off the list. You don't have to watch it. I watched 4 episodes of it for you guys so that you don't have to.
See, like, I know Eric well enough to know that Eric might actually be really, like, Eric's a weird guy, and, like, the only way I could put it is, like, Carl levels of accepting, our friend Carl from Ogiway Maniacs, of, like, easygoing on shows. And so I think he might actually get something out of the time travel mechanics. But he is, like, super critical. So he'll, like, tear apart that show in ways, like, every way that you would expect a good person to, but then still get something out of it because of, like, examining the time travel mechanics. But there are better things for you to do with your time, Eric. I feel like he might get something out of it because of that. There are better things to do with your time.
There's so many, for somebody who doesn't watch a lot of anime, I could recommend so many other things.
Or so many shows with better time travel mechanics, if you want.
Tanaka is fired, Tiger and Bunny. Metal Caveman said Food Wars. And Krimlian said finish Legend of the Galactic Heroes. So we already mentioned Legend of the Galactic Heroes. It's a little understandable, very long. So, all right, now, since I already picked your shame one, now you get to pick your own, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So I had 3. You know, one of them is Lupus.
Oh, save that one for last.
Okay. So 2 that I really feel like going back to is one of them is Beast Player Eren, which was a book series by the woman who did Morabito. And that one was finished, and the anime is finished. We saw the first episode. It seemed really fun, but it is, like, isn't it, like, a 50, like, it, I think it's, like, a really long, I think it's a 50-episode TV series.
It was long, and it was also never licensed, and
no, I thought it was. It was on Crunchyroll, or I swear it was licensed streaming.
Okay.
But, you know, it's really long, but it was good from the first episode. And the woman writes about it really well, and it seemed like a solid adaptation of her work. Literally no reason not to go back to it. I've seen, like, reviews, everybody who finished it, great series. So it was like, 50 episodes, and then it just at the end. So literally no reason to not watch it other than time has passed by, and there's a lot of other stuff to do in one's life, but definitely one that I like. If, like, I had a good excuse, I would go back and watch. And the other one is not the shame one, both of us, but might also be one, which is Gengai Kickoff. That one, at least, was never licensed, and thereby is only fan sub. So we have the excuse of, like, it is fan sub, which is, you know, and there's so much stuff that you can watch streaming that's legit.
Had a good first episode.
And once again, yeah, no, it just seemed like a really fun soccer anime. Had a good male and female lead. Seemed just like a fun show, really worth watching. So, for shame.
I agree.
And my last one, which is like a show we had planned to, like, even watch for the blog. We never really watched Heroic Age.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Do people even remember that one? I bet it's one of those lost in time unless you were there at that moment. Yeah, yeah.
Just because, mostly because I feel like it's the one that I wanted to leave to the end. Because I feel it was such a, like, lost to the ages show. Because I feel like people, because it had very similar character designs to Gundam Seed. Because it had this same character designer. I feel like people were, like, a little over Gundam Seed and that guy's character designs. So I feel like that show just kind of slipped into obscurity. And I'm not sure it'd be great, but I just wanted to see it and, like, judge it. Because I feel like it's not even a show that, like, people hate and that's why it got buried. It just seemed to disappear. So I want to have an opinion because it just seems to be a show that slipped past so many people's opinion. That, I mean, for for good or for ill, I would like to know what that showed like.
Yeah, and you're right, we had plans to watch it. It was always, oh, maybe when we're doing this, we'll watch it. So I think at the top of my list, and I would think that you would pick this one for me. That was what I was doing. As you can see, guys, that's what I was doing. I was like, what would each of us pick?
Definitely, it was definitely Fate Zero, right?
I think you would say Razavan. Which, yes, shocking as it may be, I have never seen. And I know, you know, I know what it gets compared to. I know it, and it's from a period of time in which I was watching anime, but it just sort of never made it onto my plate.
Well, I feel like a lot of people avoided it specifically because they just thought it was an Evangelion also run. And it kind of, like, you could argue easily that it is, but I think there's enough interesting going on that it's worth watching.
And I have a few things that I've either only seen a few episodes of, or like, oh, I never finished that, but I liked it, which is like Gankutsuo. I've never actually seen all the way through. And this one is dubious because I'm not sure I want to see it all the way through. Wolf's Rain, I've never actually seen all the way to completion.
So, yeah, that one's weird because I've met so many people who have completely opposite opinions. I feel like it is a show that everybody is on board with, like 75% to 85% of the way. And then that ending, you either love it and think it like makes the series brilliant, or hate it and think that it shot that show in the back of the head. And like, I'm sure if like I asked on the internet, there would be people who have a middle of the road opinion, but you rarely speak to them. The people who talk about Wolf's Rain are the people who love it or the people who hate it. So it makes it seem like that is everybody.
Everybody has a lot of opinions about it.
That opinion is never, it was okay.
No. And then, because I love 70s anime, but a lot of them are really long. So I have only ever seen a couple of episodes of, like, Candy Candy, or at least 70s-style anime. And then I've only seen the opening, and I want to see all of Angie's Girl, which is a girl who is a detective for the Queen of England. So I think there's a lot older shows that I've always wanted to watch. And what's that one where it's like the masked bandit girl, the masked thief girl?
That's the Tomino one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's like something of the Sen.
Yeah, that.
I think, my only thing is, one, if you watch Candy Candy, that is some Tomino level killable.
Oh, I know. I mean, I know the story of Candy Candy already. It's not
like,
as
did you watch that movie?
I didn't watch the movie, but I know the death. Okay, I know the death that happens. Like that, it would not be a shock. I know it's one of those series that I know a lot about, but I've never actually watched.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't assume that Angie's Girl isn't filled with murders of the main cast. Maybe murders that she has to solve.
Yes!
But Murder, She Wrote style.
Oh, I didn't even remember that she's also Sherlock Holmes' niece. So basically, it's just
made for Kate.
Yes! Yes!
The most fascinating news and conversations from this month.
So the second half of this podcast is going to be dedicated to New York Comic Con. We're not really doing like a bunch of con reports about it, so we're just going to put it here. And yeah, I mean, I think we should start with the biggest news of the convention, which is that no one cried and or was almost killed at the Walking Dead panel.
I kind of don't believe that. I feel like, yeah, as you did mention, Kate, they were trickies and put up the feedback panel against stuff this year as opposed to being pretty much just like the last Dead Dog panel. In fact, it was up against the 25th anniversary Batman panel, Batman the Animated Series panel. I mean, there were other cool things, but that was pretty killer to put it against. It's like, do you want to complain or do you want to see Batman the Animated Series?
And we know the answer to that.
Well, no, Kate, there were plenty of people complaining.
Right, that's what I meant. I meant everybody went to complain. Nobody was at that panel.
I see. Or they, what do you call it? Or everybody who didn't get a ticket at the beginning of the day was like, I guess I'll complain now because I couldn't see Batman the Animated Series, the panel. Do you think that maybe in a year or two we won't have Walking Dead on the badges and then we'll actually have something else?
Well, I think eventually the Walking Dead TV show does have to end. I think. I mean, I guess it could go on for infinity, but I assume that eventually it will end and or people will be over it and it won't be as big of a thing as it is.
I'm wondering if that's already, since there wasn't any, you know. And then my grandmother got trampled because she was just saying goodbye to us as we were trying to get into the Walking Dead panel.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about actually what we care about, because we don't care about the Walking Dead panel. But you did see some other stuff at Madison Square Garden. I mean, we thought that moving it there would fix it, but it seemed like last year that didn't fix it, but somehow they have now fixed it. Did you notice anything different about the Madison Square Garden?
I mean,
way of doing things, or?
I don't know. I wonder how much it's what I went to, because I only went to two things, and they were right after each other at Madison Square Garden. I went to see the Peter Capaldi panel because it's his last season as Doctor Who. So we saw him there. And then right after that was the Pacific Rim 2 panel. But I only got there an hour early on Friday. And I kind of got like front row seat. Not front row, but only like four rows back. And then I just stayed in my same seat for Pacific Rim because it was close enough. And I was off to the left, but I was like right in front of the, you know, one of the big displays. So, and I could see the guys on stage and ladies on stage really easily. So, yeah, I don't know how that went on Saturday or anything, but it didn't seem that hard to get in. I do know people did complain that there was no room clears and that some people did. Now that I think about it, somebody did complain that, like, they felt people stayed in the theater all day for Walking Dead, but they more wanted, like, why can't you do room clears more than, like, I couldn't get into the Walking Dead or I nearly died. And they were like, the problem is Madison Square Garden is in an area where we can only line up so many people, and thereby room clears are just a no-go. Even with, you know, New York Comic Con's power and clout, that's just, you know, taking up area, more space than they already have in that area is just impossible for them.
And I wonder if it's also because it's so huge that it's also a massive time suck. I mean, that's the reason that they didn't want to do room clears even in the convention center, but they do for the main stage. But I wonder, that's always been their thing, is that it takes more time, and in a space that big, it must take a really long time.
Yeah, so it's just a logistical nightmare. But I didn't have any problem, but I wonder how much it's, you know, we're past peak Doctor Who so far. Maybe this new Doctor will change that, especially we've got a new female Doctor. We've got a new showrunner because people were not happy with Moffat. So there's some potential for that show to regain momentum. But I don't know. I mean, the theater's pretty fact. And then, so I don't know. I didn't have any problems with it.
And what about the Hammerstein Ballroom, because I didn't attend anything that wasn't in the Javits Center, so.
The Hammerstein, it was weird, because there were these leapfrogging bins where they put people in, because right in that area was also the Nintendo World Tournament. And so it was like part of the line for the Hammerstein, part of the line for the Nintendo World Tournament, part of the line for the Hammerstein. And they were in these, like, little, like, fenced-off bins. But we had to stop. We were going to get there an hour early as well, but then we stopped to go to the bathroom because we both realized, you know what? Maybe it's not the best idea to have to go to the bathroom and then wait for over possibly an hour online. So we went to the bathroom and we still got in fairly easily. The interesting thing was as we were going in, they took off the sign. Like literally when we were walking through the thing, they said that they weren't stopping people for food. But that also means that like at least a third of the line went in before that was challenged.
And what day was that?
That was Saturday.
So up until Saturday, they had that policy in place then, presumably, also?
And then we saw some things that I've never, like, apparently they don't allow umbrellas in there. I snuck my umbrella in pretty easily, but because someone did complain about this in feedback, they didn't allow gum and markers in, and I know that is because they've had vandalism problems, people leaving gum on the seats, and people tagging up the place with markers. So they're like, no felt-up markers, no gum. And apparently they collected a lot of gum.
Well, yeah, that's just something people have. Sometimes they don't even know that they have.
But it didn't seem that hard to get in. Once again, it was for a mangaka guest, even if it was a Saturday. So it's cool that they finally let in food there, because that was always such a pain in the arse. I mean, I specifically had breakfast beforehand because, you know, any other place, I'd just bring it with me.
And did you go to the mercantile building at all?
No. I thought about going there once and just how my schedule aligned, I didn't.
Yeah, so I didn't get there because that was a brand new space this year, and it's also the closest off-site space to the convention center, so that was good that it wasn't very much of a walk for people, but I didn't actually go to it. Just saw it on the map. And once more of those hotels open, theoretically there will be closer by off-site spots because the convention center is under construction. It's having some major construction until 2021. And then I'm sure there will be more construction after that on the like other parts of the convention center. So the Javits was a little, you know, it's the Javits Center. Is it ever going to be good? I do not actually know. Maybe when we're dead, they'll finally finish everything and it will be great. But I think they were feeling the squeeze of that construction this year. And I saw so many con reports that were all titled some variation of Quest for the Bathroom, basically, because they lost so many bathroom facilities from this construction. So it was an ongoing theme of the convention, apparently.
Make room references?
I mean, possibly. I might have missed those con reports out.
I see.
I didn't feel as though the convention center was more crowded than usual. I don't know how you felt about it. I know they had to sell less
tickets. Yeah, it's a little hard to tell. It's always a little crowded.
I mean, it's a convention. Of course it's crowded, but I didn't feel an overwhelming, except in the Artist Alley a couple times.
Yeah. I specifically avoided Artist Alley unless somebody I was with was deliberately going there. I didn't just randomly wander into Artist Alley. Like, I'll sometimes do that in the regular convention, but nah, not this year.
No, it was as bad. If anybody listened to our pre-con podcast in which I complained about it like five separate times, it was pretty bad. And also on Sunday, not only is that space tiny, Sunday is always a really crazy day in the alley for whatever reason, but also the up escalator there broke that day too. So obviously it turned into stairs, but it just slowed everything down. So it was a real
All they didn't have was, and then a wizard appeared in the middle and began polymorphing people.
It was pretty bad. It was probably as bad as I thought it was going to be, so I really hope that they move it next year.
That came up in the con feedback, and the most reasonable idea, I think, was to move it to the Mercantile, but everybody in the audience was super mad when they asked if they might want to move it off the Javits Center. But I feel like that seems to be the place to go. I mean, the other place to go would be, in my opinion, where they currently have the VIP lounge and the press thing. But as you guys mentioned, you know, people pay a lot for that VIP section, and moving it to the VR dungeon, as I like to call it, might be considered so much of a downgrade.
Yeah, I feel as though some of those VIP badges are like $800 or some crazy business. At least I didn't actually look at them this year, but in years past, they've been ridiculous. There's been cheaper ones, but there's like a whole range. So I feel like that space would be awesome for Artist Alley. I think that is exactly where it should be too, but I think they have to justify making people, not making them, I guess, but offering that sort of package. They have to justify it some way. But yeah, I think that'd be a great space for it. I would also be okay with it moving to, they basically gave it the worst space in the convention center. It's the worst section. So I would love to see it trade, something else be traded for the worst section. I don't know what that should be, but I feel like the other basement halls are better than that one. So if it moved to one of those, I think that would be good. I'd be fine with it moving to the Mercantile for a non-permanent thing. Once the Javits Center was finished, it would move back. But I'd be more curious. Like, my personal experience was really bad with it, but I would kind of want to know how the artists felt about it. Because it's really for their, I would think it'd be there for their benefit to move it, but maybe they're like, we did great business, it doesn't matter, and we don't want them not be in the convention center, but.
Yeah, no, it would be interesting to see what the artists have to say about it. Also, they're going to be the people buying the booths, so, you know, if they, you know, we might all love the Mercantile, but if they feel like they're going to take a major hit, and thereby not by booths, then, yeah, some weird compromise inside the convention center is better than people feeling like they've been exiled to the Mercantile.
Exactly. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the solution is, because there's really not a lot of space. It's really unfortunate, because that is definitely one of the best parts of the convention. And I didn't really spend very much time down there. I made like as quick of a lap as I could, but it was really wall-to-wall people, and I'm not very tall, so sometimes it was just impossible to see what was at somebody's table.
That's just such a weird statement. It's like, it'd be like me going, I didn't really feel like going to the Type Moon booth. It was there. Meh.
Oh, you're saying me not hanging out in the alley? I did not want to be there. It was like the air there was bad or something. It was just had a really bad vibe to the whole thing.
And once again, I feel like when it was the VR dungeon last year, wasn't that bad? Because there was a decent amount of stuff down there, but it never felt like they were trying to cram 10 pounds of material into a 5-pound bag like it did this year with Artist Alley.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the great things about the alley and about New York Comic Con is that the alley is busy. It's really does a really good business. It's really popular. So, but everything else is popular too. I mean, you know, like, I don't know how to make it work.
I mean, a lot of people felt like they didn't want it to move. Also, I remember one lady complaining at the con feedback that it's like one of the most pure comic-y things at the convention. I mean, there's some panels and stuff, but if you want just pure comics, you don't get pretty much purer than Artist Alley. And so that's why she was very upset that they would think of moving it outside of the Javits.
I don't know what the solution is.
Time machine that makes the construction finish before next year.
Oh, that's a great idea. You should have suggested that at ConFeedback.
Damn it.
You missed your chance.
Hopefully they listen to this and use that suggestion.
The show floor was, you know, the show floor, I think. I'm trying to think of anything really specific to say about it besides that it was fine.
I was surprised. I got a bunch of stuff from the tech booth because you get to go on like the Danger Boat from the new show that's on Amazon Prime. And I got a poncho and pins and a video of me doing stuff and an ID card. So I had to wait on there, but I got a lot of stuff out of it.
That's very impressive. There was a lot of movie/TV things to do because they had that big Star Wars exhibit.
And I saw that. It was mostly weapons and like generic character outfits. So like First Order troopers and, you know, rebellion trooper stuff. There was only one thing that could minorly be considered a spoiler, like one person's vehicle. But it's like, oh, this person has a vehicle. All right. So they were very like, you know what, let's not shoot ourselves. I mean, I'm sure like some deep dive nerd could probably be like, ah, by looking at this one item, I figured out this, which then lead me to this, which spoiled that. But if there was such a, you know, use a piece of minutia to learn a plot point thing, I didn't pick up on it.
I really liked the fandom app booth area.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they did the food truck thing that is very, very popular. And they also were doing silk screening right there, which was really fun to watch. And they were doing four different designs, and you could get a t-shirt or a bag. And that was limited. I was able to get a bag. I also got food truck ticket.
Which item did you get?
At the food truck?
Yes.
I gave my ticket away. I did not actually... I mean, because I could get into the con a little bit faster than other people, I went there for others and got a ticket. So I did not actually sample, but you did, right?
Yeah. But do you know what they got or no? The person you gave the ticket to? Or no, not really.
Pickle soda.
Ah.
Or whatever that was called.
Pickle Rick from Rick and Morty. I got the porgies in a blanket. The porgies are like the new mascot-y creatures from Star Wars. It was good. It was like a little like kiki thing in a tortilla. It was good.
Oh, it wasn't like there wasn't meat?
No. It was like a kiki thing.
Oh, the name of it really made me think.
No, so did I. There wasn't anything meat related this year.
Like maybe that was on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Because I know they've had, like, little mini sandwiches before. But, yeah, this was Porgy in the Blanket. There was a upside-down Stranger Things waffle. There was, like, a chocolate-covered with sprinkles bat from Walking
like a pretzel.
And then the pickle soda. You know what that might have been? Because they have a voting gauntlet where they have, like, 20 items. And then the top four ones are the ones they... give away at the truck. So maybe just this year, the ones with any kind of meat and stuff just didn't make it into the final four.
But yeah, it seems to be now a staple of the con. Mm-hmm. They've had it 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah.
So I liked that area, and I also did not know what the fandom app was, and since I was in line waiting for things, I was able to look it up, which it seems pretty cool. I haven't tried it out yet, but it's an app an app that aggregates for you, and so you can put in whatever thing that you're into, and it will then pull from the internet and almost give you like your own, it's like a news feed for whatever, you know, Star Wars or Nintendo or whatever.
Mm-hmm. You could have it just give you all the Reverse Thieves news.
I assume that you can do that. I was glad to see that building off of last year, looks like all the publishers, book publishers that have booths there, literature-wise, like from big publishers, now sell books because for for so many years they never sold their books. They had giveaways and they had displays of their books, but you couldn't actually buy books. Now I don't think any of them have that anymore. I think everybody was selling their books, which was really good to see.
Do you, I actually didn't spend that much time in there. Did you feel like they had more or less giveaways? Or I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking about that before the podcast, and I feel like most booths, I feel, have less completely free stuff and more raffles and giveaways and come back at this time for free stuff or sign up for this thing and get free stuff. There was still, you know, some places where you could grab a pin or something, but I felt like there was less overall throwing free things to the crowd kind of madness. And I wasn't sure if that was actually true that I noticed that or if it was because I am now very particular about the free things that I pick up. And I definitely turned down a lot of free stuff because I didn't see myself using it. So I just didn't take it.
Such as?
I knew you were going to ask that. And I'm trying to remember. It wasn't a lanyard, was it? It was just some stupid thing. I can't even remember. Now I can't even remember what it was, but it was just some sort of little object. It wasn't a button, because, you know, I wouldn't have said no to that. But it was just like, no, I don't need that.
So I got that poncho. I haven't used it yet, but I feel like that was pretty. And I got this stupid fidget spinner from, like, some Walking Dead game. And I've actually used this a lot. It's fun.
Yeah, I think you picked up some very useful items.
So I didn't get a lot, but I think I enjoyed all the free items that I got. So I think that was, this was actually a good year for me.
I did get some free stuff. I did wait in line at the fandom booth to get a bag, a tote bag with a silk screening on it, which was cool.
Oh, that was free?
Yeah, you just had to get, it was just limited, like the food truck.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or, slash, you could get the tote or the t-shirt. But it was limited, so you had to get in line. And there wasn't a ticket to come back, you just had to be in line. So I really liked that. I got a button for the Shades of Magic series, which I was really excited about.
Is that sequel to Shades of Grey?
Your disappointment. That might have been it. I don't know if I bought one French comic. Which I got signed. And I was the only person to get one signed because she got some sort of like insect bit her that morning on her hand or something, so she was going to cancel her signing, but I was already there, and she was like, okay, I'll do this one, and then they canceled it after me, so she only did one, and she did a sketch inside the book. So I felt really lucky.
Wow, that's a story.
Yeah, and I felt really bad for her, and then also really lucky. And that book, by the way, guys, is called Scarlet Rose. The first one just recently came out in English. It's like something like 13 or 14 volumes ongoing in French. And it's about this girl in, I don't know what period of French history, maybe like 1700s.
Pre-revolution?
Yeah, probably. Yes, I think so. It's very vague.
I guess that is like, what are their nobles?
Yes. So, yeah. So it's pre-revolutionary France, and her father gets murdered, and so she wants to take revenge for him. He had taught her fencing, and then she goes to live with her grandfather, who she doesn't know very well, and she then gets, like, brought into nobility, and she doesn't really like it, and then she starts becoming a Robin Hood-like character after this other character who is, like, a Robin Hood. She's like, I love him! He's the greatest! So then she's like, I'm just gonna become one, too! And also, she wants to find the killer of her father. And there's some sort of, like, conspiracy with the Templars that has to do with it. So, it was pretty cool.
It had a distinctly manga-esque style.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely manga-inspired. So yeah, that was cool. And I learned about that at the PW European Comics Invasion panel, which they now do every year. And is a very sparsely attended panel, foolishly, because it's such a great panel to learn about comics that you didn't know about. And it has creators on it that you didn't know were at the convention. And usually everything that they're talking about, or at least one thing from each of those creators, is available in English so that you can go. And that's how I found out about this book. So
I feel like European comics have never had that major boom that manga has had. And, if you saw the box office numbers, that Valerian movie isn't going to be the thing that sparks off a European comic craze in the U.S. But, yeah, it is interesting always to see, what they're doing back on the continent, as they say. I was pleased to see that there wasn't a large demification of manga this year. People weren't like, manga, it's the devil. You have to kill the devil.
And since one of them was heavily inspired by manga, that would have been a really awkward panel.
I wonder if it's like a little bit of a calm down, or if it was just that, like, there was a woman on the panel who had a distinctly manga style, so everybody was just, holding back their hate.
I hope not.
The one comic artist who, did the famous, the naughty boy one. What was that one?
Oh.
Seeing that guy Zepp and his Tatuf comic. It seems like one of those things of, once again, unlike if, our one or two European listeners are probably like, yeah, of course, Tatuf. And we're all like, oh, he is a popular character? That is interesting.
Yeah, I was really, not that I know a lot about European comics, so of course there's going to be plenty of stuff I didn't know, but I was really surprised that I had never, ever, ever heard of that character at all. And for those listening who have never heard of him either, he's sort of they kept comparing him to sort of the popularity or the well-known nature of Bart Simpson or Charlie Brown, that level of recognition. I think he would definitely seem like a more of a Bart Simpson. There's certainly more of a mischievous nature to him.
And he mentioned that there's a bit more of a discovering young sexuality kind of, motif to him. Yeah, it was just once again, it would be someone going, if Charles Schultz went to a European comic convention, everyone was like, oh, who's this guy? Oh, he's popular in the States? All right.
I know. See, that's why this panel is so fascinating. And they bring creators like this to the con because the French Comics Association has a booth at the con. They have tons of artists that just hang out there and they do these panels and they do the signings. And it's a really cool booth, too. And this year they were connected with the Kinokuniya booth, so they were selling a whole bunch of comics through them.
Yeah, there was a French only, just learn about the comics of France, some Franco-Belgian comics in general panel on Friday, but that was all the way at the library and it was too lazy to go.
I heard a lot. I didn't go to any of the library panels, but I heard they were all really great though, very interesting and informative. And
yeah, no, I'm curious to, I should actually look if, they've put that one online or anything. Since we are an anime and manga podcast.
Oh, really?
Yes. I feel like I should at least talk about, I went to the two Kiramashima panels. So, he had two panels. One was essentially the Kodansha Comics panel, and then the other one was the Funimation panel. So they basically wanted you to ask manga questions at the Kodansha Comics panel and anime questions at the Funimation one. Generic questions you could ask at either. So he's been to the United States before, either at New York Comic Con or New York Anime Festival. I can't remember which one, but one of those two. And, like, I just remember the first year that he came, someone just flat out asked him, "So, man, were you, you know, picked by magazine because they wanted you to compete with Oda? Because I heard that right up, like, point blank." So, obviously not learning from that experience, Kodansha Comics, their question and answer was, like, totally open to the, other than, like, one or two canned questions at the beginning, they just let the audience ask him questions, and it was just, it was almost like, if I did not know better, I would assume, oh, this was a, like, what questions not to ask lesson.
Oh no, it was that bad, all of them?
So, before it even started, if you've ever been to New York Comic Con, like, the bigger stage panels usually have a hype man who's, you know, some kind of, like, comedian or entertainer from the area who is there to warm up the crowds and keep them entertained while they, you know, wait 10, 15 minutes in their seats. So the guy before the panel came out, and I've seen him on one or two other panels, and he usually, like, has some little contest or something to do, and he gives somebody a prize, and then he banters with other people in the audience. So the first lady picks, since it was a live drawing, was this lady who turned out to be an art teacher, and she drew a fairy tale character. She was very entertaining, a lovely lady, seemed very smart. The problem was, and the hype man was loving this, because she was just entertaining enough that, he had a great rapport. She was giving him everything he needed to make it entertaining. But then when she started drawing, she was obviously concentrating more on that, and so, like, you know, hype levels start going down, but people, you know, he has the camera set up so people can see what she's drawing, so they're being entertained that way, but so he brings out somebody else from the audience to talk to them while the lady is drawing. And if he picked perfectly the first time, his, the exact opposite happens this time, because he's like, all right, cosplayer, I'll pick a cosplayer this time. And so the first question you ask when you bring out a cosplayer is, oh, what are you dressed as? Especially if you don't recognize it. Unfortunately, the person then spent the rest of the time trying to explain how this was his fan fiction original character.
No! He should have picked someone dressed as a fairy tale character.
I just don't think he knew what a fairy tale character was. And so he got a fairy tale character, Kate.
Oh, it was from a fairy tale fan
fiction.
Oh my God!
And this guy was trying to explain about which two characters he was a kid of, and, you know, how they came together and why he's a mixture of the two of the parents.
Oh my God, that's amazing though. Like, that you could pick so well.
And then, like, and the problem was this dude was not taking any cues from the hype man that, all right, done, dude. Nor does the audience want to hear about your fanfiction original character. And so, yeah, but, like, the minute, like, one, when this guy started talking for, like, more than 3 minutes, you could just tell the face of the hype man was like, ooh, I chose poorly. And then, like, the minute that lady was done, he, like, gave her a present, shuffled those two people off there as quick as possible. I have to say, Hiromashima knocked out like 13 or 14 drawings during a 1 hour.
Wow! While talking?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, that has to show just the level of training and, you know, just having done this so much over the years. Has to be thinking and doing other things and drawing at the same time. That's amazing.
So I was really impressed by that. So let me just, like, mention that was really cool that he was able to do that.
Did he only draw fairy tale characters?
He drew, mostly. Since it was fairy tale, he mostly drew fairy tale characters. He did do Plue, which is kind of, he's technically from Ravemaster, but he's become like a generic mascot for Hiro Mashima. He drew his editor, and then, so a lot of people, they gave all the way, they basically had like a contest at the end to give away all the sketches, but god damn it, did every third person just try to get that guy to draw something and give it to them directly.
Oh, people asking questions?
Yes. And there was one dude who, this was his whole quote-unquote question. Yo, man, I'm from the Dominican Republic. Draw me. Done. That was his question.
That's not a question.
Yes. the moderator tried to cut him off, but unfortunately, the lady who was doing the translation was so quick that before he could say anything, she would already halfway translated his question. So, one of them was of this dude from the Dominican Republic.
Oh, he actually did it?
Yeah.
No!
And as I mentioned, he did Plue in his editor who was on the stage. So someone got a picture of the Ravemaster mascot and Hiro Mashima's editor.
And random dude.
I don't think they gave a random dude one.
Oh, okay.
Because at least the other one, you got, like, you know, his mascot character. We also got the dude who asks his question in Japanese and then doesn't translate it for the audience. Also, the moderator went, oh, it's you again, meaning that this guy serially does this.
And did he actually do a good job of saying in Japanese, or was the translator like, I have no idea what you're saying?
He was actually decent, and he was, at least get around with, I mean, you have to ask a native speaker, but he didn't stumble a lot, and the translator didn't have to, like, ask him three times, so...
What a jerk!
Yeah, no, there was the other, there was the classic, so, I'm a creator, but he did the DEFCON level 2, I'm a creator, could we do some kind of collaboration?
Oh my gosh, wow, people are real ballsy at this one.
there was somebody asked him of, like, the main character, do you think he should have ended up with this character or that character? And then he was drawing the main couple, which is the main character and the main girl, and he just, like, holds up his, like, 75% done picture and just, like, winks. And so that girl gets the message. Another girl comes up. So who do you think the main character should end up with? And the moderator first, because there were two, because it was in the main events, and there were two lines, the moderator just assumed, oh, she, you know, since they're like pretty much on opposite ends of the hall, he asked, not in like a sarcastic way, oh, did you not hear the last girl's question? Thinking, oh, she must have, you know, either being nervous or just by the acoustics of the room, must not have heard the other person's question. She's like, yes, I did.
What?
And like, you could tell that everyone was like, I don't know what more he needed to do other than, like, you know, do their names under the umbrella. she got the answer that you would have thought. In contrast, the Funimation panel was nothing but canned questions, and thereby, like, I feel like you got some interesting questions in the Kodansha one, but you didn't get any cringeworthy ones in the Funimation one. He did kind of admit in the Kodansha one that he was, like, because somebody asked him how he got into manga and stuff, and working at magazine in particular. And he did mention that he was specifically chosen as someone to help them hopefully compete with their rival at Jump, which is kind of a slight confirmation of the old story that he was specifically chosen to be, like, their answer to Oda, which I thought was...
I feel like that fact, I guess we couldn't have called it a fact, but it was never a dispute. No one was ever like, that's totally 100% not what was going on. But I guess having somebody confirm it or whatever.
I mean, yeah, that one came from the horse's mouth. So I feel like that was an interesting revelation. Even if it was kind of a 90% known, I feel like if anybody's like, well, where has it ever been said? You can now point to this panel. Mm. I feel like it is a total lesson in the benefits and drawbacks of letting the audience answer, ask questions.
A case study. Since I didn't attend any Hiramashima panels, but I did want to mention that the Kodansha booth was really cool because they had this sort of exhibit section that had a bunch of fairy tale. It wasn't originals, but they had sort of the process of making the art, and they had this big section where you could write on a post-it a thank you, because fairy tale's ending, and so you could write like a note to Hiramashima, and in their booth space. So that was really cool. And they had a bunch of exclusive for the con fairy tale posters, and they had some massive,
like, super set gift bag.
Yeah, that was like $150 or something, and there was all kinds of stuff in it. And I know that sold out because I saw either on Saturday or whatever, walking by the booth, that it had like the sold out sign. So they did have a lot of cool stuff for the event.
I did also notice that since Ed Chavez has left Vertical, basically the Kodansha booth became, oh, and I guess we have Vertical stuff here booth. Which is like, ooh, hopefully Vertical will get somebody to do these shows in the future. But I also saw the Toon Lady team who does the Zelda comics. And almost as if the word had gotten out, that was also nothing but canned questions. Have you read the Zelda comics that they've done?
A little bit.
I haven't, but it seemed like they gave them a decent amount of, like, leeway in their adaptation of the games. Like, they've added, like, original parts of the game, like, original story that's not in the game, original characters. Like, in one of them, there's this thief girl that joins Link in one of his adventures, and she's, like, pretty much, like, a co-protagonist. They even added a race. Like, apparently, like, the bird people are partially based, that have been in Zelda games, are partially based on what they've worked that they've done. So, so they, you know, they seem to get, like, a lot of leeway. And they did mention that, you know, Link is kind of a very ciphery character. So, like, every comic, they kind of make Link his own character in each of the, like, the kind of character they'd see Link being in that adventure. Also, apparently, when they write the comics, they first get, like, a complete playthrough, like, basically a let's play of the game. And then, as they work on the game, they'll actually play it and take breaks. But basically, they just want, like, the let's play to get the, you know, the quick rundown of the game, and then they kind of get their own feel from the game as they go on playing it. But they're like, it's just, we don't have the time to play through the game completely and then start the work, so we start with the let's play.
Did they talk at all about their original series that's upcoming?
No, unfortunately. Like, they didn't talk about any of the, they talked a little bit about how they got together. One of them was already a professional mangaka, and the other lady started as her assistant, and they just worked so well together that, like, the rest of the staff was like, oh, you guys should actually, like, do a little, like, Comic Head project together. And so they started out doing, like, Cyborg 009 Dojin, and they just found that they worked so well together that they began to pitch themselves as, like, a duo. But they didn't go into like any original work that they did together as a duo or anything. They would, like, other than that, they were strictly talking about their Zelda experiences or just like very generic mangaka experiences. Oh, and apparently they're the anti-Rooster Teeth, because Rooster Teeth, just from like my sister popping in for their panel, they hate horses, whereas the ladies who do the Zelda comic love horses. In fact, they had a, like, their, like, promotional picture that they put up was them in costume with one of their horses in costume as well.
So great. I love it.
Because apparently they're doing a little world tour. Like, Zelda is such a big thing that they've gone to a bunch of countries. Like, they just came back from, like, a few countries in, like, South America. They recently went to Abu Dhabi. So, you know, Zelda has been letting them see the world even more than most mangaka, because Zelda just opens that many doors. So, yeah, the theme was, like, world travelers.
The Viz booth was pretty cool. I didn't see a lot of Zelda-specific exclusives or anything, but in general, their booth is always really neat, and this year they had a life-size Jotaro that you could take your picture with, so I thought that was interesting.
I'm really sad that they didn't have the wall of signing boards this year. That was so amazing. But, I mean, I guess you can't do that every year.
I guess I have to save it for some other things, so, you know. We got Jotaro instead. Nah.
Look, Kate, it could have been Polaris.
No, it couldn't have. No. Can you imagine if they only had Polaris? Also, when we walked by, for some reason, I called Jotaro Jojo, as if anyone in the series ever actually refers to anyone as Jojo, which they don't, at least not in the ones that I've seen, so I was really confused at myself for calling characters Jojo, and that's not, they don't even go by that.
People call them that all the time, Kate. That's what the
manga... In their heads. And apparently me in my head.
Just as a side note, I'm, like, really curious when they're going to announce part 5.
When? When will it happen? It's been so long. I don't understand. But now, isn't David Productions doing Ninja Batman or whatever? So, will they have time?
Oh, yeah, I did see the Ninja Batman thing. I totally forgot about that. Thank you, Kate.
Okay. Tell us more about Ninja Batman. Or Batman Ninja, whatever the hell it's called.
So, it's Ninja Batman. And I was originally not going to see it, but when I was online on Thursday waiting to get in, my roommate was talking about it, and I was like, that actually seems like, oh, wait, there's a lot of Japanese names. This actually seems to be like a somewhat anime-esque production, or at least some kind of co-pro. Let me go see it. So instead of going directly to the dealer's room, I got my main ticket. And we went to see Ninja Batman. And so it seems to be a lot of people who worked on Afro Samurai with some other people being brought in. And it's basically, like you said, David Productions, them, Batman.
In outer space, right? That's probably...
Yes, you got... he basically gets transported back to feudal Japan and... They're basically a bunch of thereby, you know, samurai times themed Batman villains that he has to fight to find a way back to modern day.
But is he a ninja?
He seems to be studying under some ninjas to figure out how to defeat, like, evil Shogun Joker. So he becomes a ninja by the end of this.
If this thing is well animated, it's just gonna sell, like, so crazily.
It is CG, but it's CG by the guy who did the first two JoJo's openings.
So maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe it's not David Productions working on it. Maybe it's just whoever did those openings.
Because it's technically, it's Warner Japan, Warner Animation Japan doing it. But, you know, they've got people who from JoJo's, people from a lot of Afro Samurai people, some other people to do this big production. But it's technically Warner Japan Animation.
Okay. And did they say, is it a movie?
Yeah. It's like a one-shot movie. The animation seemed pretty good, but it's a sizzle reel, so... and they said that it's like 20% done or something, so... One wonders how much, you know... They definitely put their best foot forward with that, but one wonders, you know... Is this, you know, the keyframes and everything else is, you know... Or will it, is, you know, is this the production at 100% and everything else is going to be 80%? Or is this the production at 100% and everything else is 40%? So, we'll, you know, time will tell on that one. I mean, it seemed fun and generally, you know, it's a one shot. The only possible flaw that I could see is it did seem to have like 12, like, basically cameos from, like, a bunch of different classic Batman villains, although the Joker seemed to be the main villain that they went around, but I just wonder how much it's, like, you know, the classic superhero movie thing of too many villains.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that. I guess I just generally worry because there's not really a lot of good anime versions of American superheroes. Mm. So, how well?
I mean, I have a feeling it's going to be essentially Batman Afro Samurai, which means...
It just looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cool and the plot is almost perfunctory. So, you know, hopefully the fight choreography will be cool and you'll be like, oh, that was an interesting take on, like, Clayface. Which they only, like, they hinted at, or like, ah, that was an unexpected way to put, you know, Catwoman in there.
I thought it was cool that Uniqlo was at the convention this year. This is their first year there, and they did some exclusive t-shirts for the con, and then they also had a big booth so you could buy. They brought basically anything nerd-related. They had Star Wars and One Piece and Nintendo stuff, which is all available in-store, but it was also at the con, which was fun. And you could win a trip to Japan, because they had those scanning stations all over the place. I did notice this year, which I think we predicted last year, that the badge scanning so that you could enter contests and do all this stuff, there was a lot more booths doing it this year, and I think it's just going to keep going up and up and up. Because last year it was just New York Comic Con themselves had places where you could scan your badge and win stuff, but now it was expanded to other
booths and things, yeah. As far as I know, I did not win the trip to Japan.
So. And you did not win that Beyblade thing, Al! I know you wanted it so much!
Well, you know, sometimes some of us are just born under an unlucky star.
See, that was one of those free things I passed up. There was a place where I could scan my badge. I was like, I don't want anything in this, like...
I would have liked... They did have... like when my mom won last year, where they upgrade your ticket to basically be VIP. Mm. There were, like, they had an Amazon Echo in there. I would have liked one of those. I don't want to buy an Amazon Echo, but if I scan a badge and they give me an Amazon Echo.
That's a totally different scenario. I see what you're saying.
And there was, like, a few other little interesting VIP thingies that you could have won in there, so... And a hat, Kate. A hat.
Actually, that reminds me that there wasn't an official Comic-Con button or pin this year. There was one that had, like, Wonder Woman on it, and then really small at the bottom it said New York Comic-Con 2017. And I was really disappointed. And they haven't had one in many, many years. I don't know why they do not have a pin or button, but I really... That was my major comment. I wrote it as many times as I could in my feedback. They sent a survey, and that's what I kept saying. Give me a pin! Give me a button! They have so much merch. so much official merch. It's crazy. So I don't see why they don't have that.
So maybe I should look into this more next year. But while I was waiting for Peter Capaldi, by the way, Peter Capaldi, still super nice guy. Really enjoyed his panel. You know, he's just one of those very amiable British actors. Seems like a great guy to work with. While I was waiting for that, there were these, this little group of people who were hanging out together. And one of them mentioned that him and his significant other had gone to this, like, secret Mr. Robot panel or, like, event in the city for New York Comic Con where you, like, had to, like, get this information to find out where to go. And then when you went there, you had to give, like, someone a secret code. And then they gave you, like, this mask and an address. And, like, the mask was your way in. And then you went and there was, like, an open bar and a bunch of food while you waited for the main event to begin. And so once enough people had gathered, they showed them all, like, the first episode of the new season of Mr. Robot. And, like, the presenter came out like they were one of the, like, bad guy characters. Like, working for the bad guy corporation in Mr. Robot. I haven't seen the show, but... And then, like, at the end, they, like, cut it off. And they're like, oh, no! We've been hacked! They're protesters, you know, from the resistance! And, like, the security, like, forces you out of where they played the thing. And there was, like, a fake protest by, like, the resistance against the bad guy corporation in Mr. Robot.
That's great.
But the part that I also really loved was the guy mentioned that the liquor they served was really, like, strong. And he was like, man, they must have, like, they were so rushed that they just gave it, they didn't, like, water it down. In fact, our drinks were extra strong. Where I was thinking, no, dude, they want you to go to this event, be liquored up, and then tweet about how awesome the new season is because you're, you know, you've just been filled up with yummy food. You've just gotten high alcohol drinks. You know, you're at this exclusive event. So you're just more willing, like you're more likely to give a like super stellar review on social media of this. They're doing this on purpose. This isn't an accident.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a pretty calculated move, probably.
Oh, and I also ran into Zan from the Spirikin manga cast, and he went to this, like, kind of not mentioned, like, very directly. There was a bar that they took over, and they remade it to be American Gods themed. And he went there. He actually met Neil Gaiman. And
wow.
And he, you know, had a bunch of drinks and stuff there. So I should, like, look into, like,
New York Comic Con really is taking over the city for the time that it's there. I know there were a lot of events adjacent to it this year, but a lot of them were events you had to pay for that I knew about. So I didn't know about these other
exclusives. Secret ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's why they were secret, so that I wouldn't know about them.
Yeah, no, so I was like, oh man, these are, I should like look into more of these.
But how did people find out about them?
I didn't ask him how he found out about him. And I think he had to be like part of like the, I think they might have, I got the impression like they gave it out through some kind of social media, like, but it seemed like something you had to figure out and wasn't just like, come to here. And, you know, there was a little bit of puzzle solving.
Which is even more fun. I love that. Wow. Yeah, I really wish I could have dedicated more time to New York Comic Con this year. I hope that I can next year and go all 4 days again and get back into, like, really having a whole week of Comic Con, so.
So, just before we end, one thing, because you only went the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. Did you feel Saturday was a little more watered down or, like, less compelling than previous years?
Compelling in what way? What do you mean?
Like, I feel like Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, I almost always had something to do. But I remember, like, the one reason I got all the Tick stuff, because that line was huge, was because I just had this dead spot in my Saturday schedule. So I was just like, let me see what this... I liked the new tech from what I saw. And they seem to be giving out something cool when you leave that danger boat. And then I found out it was a poncho. So I was like, yes, double awesome.
I'm not sure. I wonder if it was just an anomaly for you personally. I only went to two panels on Saturday. I spent a lot of time on the show floor, but I also kind of wonder maybe they realized that a lot of people are doing that on Saturday. I'm not sure if that's actually true, if it was just your experience.
I was just asking, because once again, everybody's experience is different. We could have asked 20 people that we know and they could have had 20 different Saturday experiences. I was just wondering if it, because Zan also felt like Saturday was a little weak for him, but it also just might be that we're, you know, primarily anime manga guys. So it's a little hard to tell.
And maybe it was, I don't know about him, but you were there for 4 days, so you had spent time. Whereas I got there on Saturday, I wanted to see a bunch of different stuff and sort of explore, where I hadn't been able to do that yet.
So. And Zan was press, and I know he was there all 4 days. So maybe that was, you know, like you said, maybe it's the 4 day thing. If anybody else went, I'm curious what they felt about their Saturday. Because I feel like that's usually the day they pull out all the stops, whereas it seemed a little more regular.
I almost wonder if that's good. If each day could feel regular and not crazy, if each day could feel similar, then maybe it spreads it around a little bit more so that you feel as though if you go any day, it doesn't matter because they are all good days. I still had a really great time. I hope that Artist Alley changes next year, and I hope that I can spend a lot of time there. But otherwise, I always find your Comic-Con to be really great, and sometimes people will... But I know that not everybody likes it, for sure. But so sometimes people will say things to me and they'll be like, oh yeah, those lines. And I'll just be like, I was fine. It was not a big deal. Like, do you want me to agree with you? Because I really don't find it a big deal to wait in line for an hour to do something. And I know that they did some lottery system this year. They did the badge check-ins for the main stage. I don't know. It just really didn't bother me at all, the crowds this year and the lines. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting, like, chill. It was only Line Con when you were going to the bathroom. That was it.
No, other than Saturday, I mean, I found stuff to do. It wasn't like I was just twiddling my thumb or like, I guess I'll just hang out by this charging station because I have so little to do.
You reminded me, though, did you try that virtual manga game or whatever that was on the show floor?
No. Like, it was supposed to be, like, virtual manga. Like, you would read the manga, but it was all around you. So, I did not. I was thinking about going to see it, and then I just didn't.
Just curious, because I didn't have a chance to do it either. But that's, I mean, in a way, isn't it good, though, that you had time to stand in line for the tick and the Star Wars or whatever?
I mean, I did enjoy going to the tick and the Star Wars that day. It just seemed odd to me. I was wondering if it was just, once again, you know, everybody's interest is different and some days just don't click with certain people. I mean, I still went to see Hiro Mashima. I did a bunch of stuff Saturday. I was just, it seemed a little odd that Saturday is usually the day you think that, like, is the most bingo bango bafalo day.
It did seem like there was a lot less, even less than previous year's anime and manga panels and stuff like that, unless a lot of them were on Thursday and Friday.
Like, there was that, like, anime, it was weird. There were one or two anime panels I just didn't get into. Like, the first Viz panel that was mostly Viz manga, but also had the ladies who did the Zelda comic, I didn't get into that one. There was an Anime Everywhere where they were talking about, like, streaming anime and manga. I didn't get into that one. That one was closed out. So there were one or two anime and manga panels I wanted to get into that I just couldn't. Like, I might have not gotten into the Zelda one, but I specifically went out of my way to get that one early because I wanted to at least see those ladies at least once during the convention. So, I mean, it seems like there's still interest in anime and manga stuff. And it wasn't like, it was, you know, they had an anime and manga guest and it was a ghost town. I mean, anytime Hiromashima was there, that was a full room. Anytime the Zelda creator ladies, that was a full room. It seemed like all the anime and manga panels, full room. So, it doesn't feel like it's, you know, six kids and me. I don't think we're gonna get a lot more than we already get, but I also feel like I don't think it's going anywhere either. I'm just curious who they will get next year.
They asked. You can fill out the survey and name your top three guests.
Kenjiro Hada. Kenjiro. Because he'd fact the rooms, right, Kate?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. I put Oda. Because I want New York Comic-Con to get somebody that the West Coast doesn't get. That's what I want. I want them to get some huge coup where it's like crazy. I mean, I guess we had the Naruto guy.
Araki would also be.
Oh, God, that would be amazing. That would be so good.
Yeah, just one step down from Kenjiro Hada.
That wraps up another Speakeasy podcast. Remember to visit reversethieves.com for all kinds of content to tide you over until the next episode.